episode of Fat Girl Book Club. For this episode, we read the book Minding the Body, which was edited by Patricia Foster. Before jumping into the book, though, let me just remind you that, or if this is your first time listening, let you know that I have a free resource. So if you are interested in improving your body image, changing the way you look at yourself in the mirror, please jump over to my website, iwishiwereme.com, and pick it up. It's called the Your Better Body Image Checklist. Grabbing a copy of that will ensure that you're on my email list. And right now, I have a free virtual book club that is going on. This book club, essentially what it means is that each month we are reading a different book, a different body acceptance book, probably something that if you've been in this space for a bit, you've heard about. And we are discussing it. So you get an email every single Wednesday if you're on my email list, which is a pretty comprehensive email. It's got a little video from me. It's got some discussion questions. It has some journaling prompts. It has all the main points from the section of the book that we're reading. It breaks down what the reading schedule is for the book and tells you all the books that we're going to be reading for the rest of the year. So it's a pretty hefty email. And you get that every week on Wednesday. And then if you jump into Facebook and look for the Better Body Image Book Club, you will find the Facebook group. The discussion questions get posted in there, and it's a free group to join. You don't really have to do anything in order to be in there. The discussion questions get posted. We talk about the book. In that Facebook group as well, you also get first notice about what new interviews I've got booked, or at least what new books I'm going to be discussing on the interviews that I'm booking. And you also get free book giveaways. So I give away a book every month. So this month, for the month of April, we just finished up reading The Body Is Not an Apology. So that book is intense. It's short, but it's intense. It's a wonderful read if you haven't read it. And next month, so for the month of May, we're going to be reading The Fuck It Diet by Carolyn Dooner. So make sure that you're in on this, because this is a really good way to start to read some of these books that maybe you've been wanting to read for a while. This will ensure that you're going to get an opportunity to read them and maybe have a place to discuss them. I will let you know that May will be the last month that it will be a free book club. So after the month of May, it will be a paid book club. I'm not anticipating a huge amount of money every month, but it's been a lot of work. So if you've been enjoying my work, this is a great way for you to support me. So come June, this will be a paid program. Now that Facebook group will always be free. You can always be in that Facebook group and you will be entered into the giveaways. The great thing is that once it becomes a paid program, I'm also going to be doing monthly Zoom meetings so that we can all get together and talk about the books. So it's going to be a really interactive thing, and I cannot wait to get this kind of flowing. So make sure that you go over, the first step is to go over to iwishiwereme.com and pick up your copy of the Your Better Body Image Checklist. That makes sure that you're on the list. That makes sure you get the emails every Wednesday. And that makes sure that you get all the information about the book club. And then if you want a second step, jump on over to Facebook and look for the Better Body Image Book Club. And get on in there. It's a safe space. Okay. The only other thing I want to tell you about that's really exciting over here in my little podcast bubble. I love this podcast. I really do. Honestly, if you've heard any part of my story, if you've read any interview with me, you know what a difference podcasts made to my life, which is why I started one of my own. It's just my little way of hopefully being able to reach out to people and say, it's okay to be in a larger body. It's okay. You're allowed to be this way. And the fact that the world is sometimes cruel to people in larger bodies is not an indication of your worth or your value at all. It's an indication of how cruel and awful the world can be. We need to make it a better place. And if even one person listens and feels like they're a little less alone, then I've done my job. But if you are interested and you do like this podcast and it is something that has been a part of your world for a little while, I do have brand new some merchandise that I am selling with the Fat Girl Book Club logo on it. So if you go to the Instagram, so I have an Instagram just for this podcast. It's Fat Girl Book Club Pod. That will be in the show notes. You can just scroll down and click. So Fat Girl Book Club Pod. You will see in the bio there that there is a link to the store. And there's only a couple things in there. There's some tote bags and a little bookmark case, I call it. Some people call it a pencil case, but it's for bookmarks, man. And, a mug, a couple little things are in there. So if you have any interest in supporting the work that I'm doing, please go over there and take a look. Hopefully you will find something that you like. Okay, with that, let me tell you a little bit about this book. So this is something I'm going to be doing from now on, is I'd like to find a little bit of a brief paragraph telling you what the book is about that we read. So I'm reading from Amazon here about what Minding the Body is about. It's a multicultural anthology of fiction and nonfiction literary narratives which addresses the psychological and political aspects of a woman's body in today's culture. An important and much needed book for women who seek to understand their bodies and find independent, imaginative ways to cope with aging, beauty expectations, and ethnic comparisons. And this book was actually written, it was put together and published, I guess, is probably the better way to word it, in 1994. Now, we talk a little bit in this interview with Jess, a little more of a deeper description of what we felt this book was about, but I thought I'd give you kind of a background on what it is and situate it kind of in history a little bit for you. Some of you probably weren't even alive when this book was published. And now that I've kind of got that out of the way and you know a little bit about this book, which I must admit I had never heard of and was very difficult to find. It wasn't an easy one to find out there, but was so worth the investigation to get a hold of a copy of it, because it actually was pretty powerful. And I think you'll hear that come through in my interview with Jess. Jess is a gym class dropout turned personal trainer. After many years in the social work field, she has pivoted to working in the fitness industry as a haze-aligned personal trainer. Her own journey took her from hating her body and constant struggle to ending the battle and finding peace with her body. Now she works to help others do the same. She's a mother of two, loves coffee, hates strawberries, and loves seeing people get fired up about lifting weights. Just before I let you loose on this interview, I just wanted to give you a quick trigger warning. Right around minute 38 or 39 in this interview, me and Jess discuss a story called Mirrors by Lucy Greeley, and there is a brief discussion, a couple minutes maybe max, around suicide. So if you think that might be triggering for you, please do what you need to do in order to keep your mental health in check. Please enjoy my conversation with Jess Brock Pitts. Hi, Jess. Welcome to Fat Girl Book Club.
Hello. It's awesome to be here with you, Jen. Thank you so much for having me.
We were talking a little bit when we weren't recording about this book and its impact, so I can't wait to get into that, but let's start with a little bit about your journey. So you call yourself a weight neutral personal trainer. So how did you get there? How did you end up taking on that title?
I guess I got into fitness in my early 20s. As a teener kid, I was not athletic or sporty in any way at all. And, you know, at first there was definitely an element of wanting to control my weight. But sort of what I got into was triathlon. And that was kind of the sport that I got.
Yeah. Right? Intense.
Go big. Go big. So I had signed up for a sprint distance race, and it was really an incredible experience just to bite off this really big, crazy, audacious goal and work my butt off and achieve it. And, you know, that in and of itself should have been enough of a transformation Without any exterior physical changes, but I definitely struggled with my weight and with dieting and with trying a ton of different things to change my body size for many years after that. Had a couple of kids in the in between and the changes that go with that. And so somewhere about like 2.5 years ago, I had gotten, I had been doing a certain diet plan and had, by their margins, been relatively successful, so to speak. But it was like not enough. And I felt like I still needed to get smaller still. So I started working with a coach who did a very regimented, like meal plan and workouts and supplements. And it was a whole thing. It led me to what I will describe as like a diet rock bottom. I was just crazy, and miserable and not enjoying any of it, and on the outside, the numbers on the scale and the measurements with the measuring tape are going where the trainer wants to see them go. But on the inside, I am like just torn up and struggling with binging that I just couldn't make sense of. And I have a background in social work, so I low key diagnosed myself with binge eating disorder. So I picked up a book about how to cure binge eating disorder, and we totally could have read that book for this, because that was my introduction. Thank God that was my introduction to intuitive eating. So in that book, she introduces, it's not an Evelyn Tribbley or Elise Resch book. I am blanking on the author's name, but she introduces the concepts of intuitive eating. That was my first introduction. From there, obviously, next I read the original intuitive eating book and, kind of through those two books started implementing that in my life. Kind of overlapping with all of that, I wanted to make a career transition out of social work and into personal training. So sort of simultaneously with that, like food and body image journey, I was also working on getting the certifications and things I needed to start to be a group fitness instructor and then a personal trainer. And so it sort of all happened all at once. And it's interesting being a personal trainer who does not focus on weight. I'm definitely vastly outnumbered. And there's still a lot of that, like your body is your business card kind of attitude among personal trainers, where, I'm a bit of an outlier, but I definitely can see where there's other folks with the same mindset and some who have been at this a lot longer than I have, but there's other people out here doing this. And I hope that we are bit by bit generating a bit of a sea change in the fitness industry, because I just think it's really a terrible tragedy that it has become that like the fitness industry is just strictly about like aesthetics and weight loss and like pushing yourself as hard as you possibly can when like it doesn't have to be like that and it doesn't have to be about that. And there's so many benefits to moving your body regularly that have nothing to do with how you look or your weight and everything to do with your physical well-being and health and your mental well-being and mental health. And I hope we're changing the industry bit by bit.
Yes, me too. Me too. I feel like I and I've said this on past podcasts too. I feel like the movement, body movement area is definitely underdeveloped, even within intuitive eating and anti-diet, because there's a lot of anti-diet dietitians, which is wonderful. I think that that's great. The more, like, we need more. We definitely need more. But when it comes to trainers that are taking weight loss out of it, there's not quite as many. So we need to see that grow. I think that's definitely an area we need to see grow. And in terms of me and what I'm doing with books, we need to see more books on it too. There really isn't a lot of books covering this issue. And I would love to see more in that realm of things, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
So what so you kind of get introduced to intuitive eating. Does that immediately spill over into what you're doing in terms of body movement and exercise? Or does that transition take quite a bit of time for you to change the way you're thinking about exercise?
I think it was definitely a little bit more gradual. And I'll tell you one of the things that happened. So I had pre-pandemic been really into trail running. I'd done a couple of like 50K ultra races. I was training for a 50 mile ultra race. And I think that, so I was training for a race that should have been in May of last year and ended up canceled because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that really super sucked the wind out of my sails with running like at all. But the other thing that I started to realize, and it took a little while to kind of like marinate with this thought, but it was like, I think that I'm doing these really extraordinary distances to kind of earn my right to be fat. Mm. And the more that I sort of sat with that thought, I started to like reconsider, like, is this really how I want to move my body? Is this really the way that I want to train? Am I really enjoying this? Is this like, is this just really what I want to do? And I'll be honest, I haven't run in about 3.5 months now. I think I met a friend for a run on New Year's Day. And I wasn't like, oh, I'm quitting running. To be honest, like just life has gotten really busy and hectic. And I've got personal training clients like every morning of the week. And so it's just hard to get in a run. So I just haven't really run. But also I kind of came to the conclusion that to run those kinds of distances, I am spending the better part of every single weekend out on the trails. And I have kids who are at an age that like they're not going to be this age again. Like soon they're going to be teenagers who want nothing to do with me. And I just started to think, and I hate to, I don't know, I say that sometimes and I feel like it sounds like a mommy guilt kind of thing, but it's not really. It's more, I guess because the place that it's coming from is not a place of like, I have this obligation or duty, but it's more like, I just don't think that that's really how I want to spend my weekends right now.
Yes. Yes.
And when I kind of really sat with like, why am I doing this? The thing that I kept, it's like, I'm earning my right to be fat. Like if I am fat, but I ran 30 miles in the last 3 days, like, psh, go ahead and say something to me. Yeah. But like, I don't need to. I have the right to exist in my body, even if all I did was hold the sofa down all weekend long.
Yes, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I would definitely say that part has been more gradual.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like the concepts, you read the books and read the posts and you read all this stuff and the concepts make sense and you're yes, yes, yes. And then pulling it into your own life and your own belief system and your own habits and behavior takes a little longer to just kind of sink in and get it all moving.
Yes, absolutely.
So before we actually jump into this book, I think that's a great segue into the book that you picked. So the book's called Minding the Body. It's from 1994. So I had never heard of it. And so you had mentioned it and we decided to run with it. So can you tell me a little bit about how this book entered your life and what kind of impact it had on you?
So I'm pretty sure, and this is still my vintage from the 90s copy of this book.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that my grandmother gave this. No, actually, because I wrote on the inside of it, my cousin gave it to me. My super cool older cousin Kate. But I think that because they gave me this and a copy of The Body Project, which was, I mean, I remember there being a lot of like kind of media coverage of that book when it came out. So the Body Project was a bit more of a sort of a like a historical accounting or like a sociological kind of perspective on, I would say, like adolescent females and their relationships to their bodies.
Okay.
So they bought me both of these books together. And this one, as a kid, I was like really into creative writing and poetry and all that kind of stuff. And so this one was like really like grabbed hold of me. And I think the interesting thing about like this book coming from like my gram and cousin Kate is like my gram in particular had such body image struggles. Like such, she was always like the woman who, you know, a couple of pounds one way or the other on the scale would like make or break her day. And, you know, she was really big on like body comparison. And like I remember even as a kid her asking me like, am I as fat as that woman? Is she bigger than me or smaller than me?
Ooh.
Just like all the time, everywhere that we went. And I feel like in some ways she, I think she recognized in some way that it was not healthy because she would kind of say one thing to me, but then her behavior, especially in regards to her own body, continued to say a different thing, if that makes sense. So I feel like in some way she could see that like this is not what I want to pass on to, you know, multiple generations of my family.
This was her gift to try to get you to do as I say, not
Right.
as I do.
So, but really though, but really.
Right.
Because, you know, as a teenager, I really struggled with my body. I mean, as most teenagers do, but I was, you know, I was a kid in the 90s. The aesthetic was like Kate Moss and I don't know, Gwyneth Paltrow and like the girl from like the Friends TV show, right? It was skinny and that really long, really super straight hair, which I obviously don't have that either. And like there was a very specific
Yes.
aesthetic, and I did not fit that aesthetic.
Yeah,
And then my grandmother would
sure.
try to make me feel better about my body by telling me things like, well, you're just built like Rubenesque. And I'm like, that's adorable. That's not really helping.
Yeah.
Can you tell that to the junior boys?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, well, that's gonna make them whatever, like me
Right.
more. If I just tell them I'm Rubenesque, most of them will
Right.
probably have to go to a dictionary to figure out what that means.
Yeah. So that was where the book came from.
Yes.
And you know, I feel like reading it again now, it hits so differently and in different there were some of the stories where, I mean, because I guess maybe I don't think you said it. It's actually a collection of short stories by a bunch of different women authors. And I think that they did a respectable job for something published in the mid 90s of trying to capture fairly diverse voices. I think it's pretty much all cisgender
Yes.
women. I don't, were they all heterosexual or I'm not even
Yeah.
sure. I think it was definitely dominantly heterosexual, but I think they
Yeah.
tried to at least capture a couple of BIPOC stories and,
Yep.
you know,
Yep.
so they could have probably been a little more diverse than they were. But I think that they captured a lot of different ways in which women struggle with their body. So there were stories that focused more on aging, stories that focused more on weight. There were some stories that focused more on like appearance, but not weight specifically. And I think there were some that did capture more of like sort of cultural struggles. Yeah, so I feel like they represented sort of an array of like
Yeah.
body struggles
I agree.
that
I agree.
the
Body,
women have.
like normally on this podcast, normally when we talk body liberation, we talk about, the box that we get put into in larger bodies. And that's kind of where the focus is where we put the focus. This definitely expands the discussion. And now we're talking about, the story about the girl with her menstrual cycle who thinks she's really dirty, or the lady with the disability who has who is living with multiple sclerosis. And like, so the expansion is there. Yes, talking about different wrinkles, or the lady with the lip wrinkles that hates those in particular. Like, those were like her focal point, So yeah, it really expands to where we're talking about the body as an object, but also as something that's part of us. And yes, definitely cisgendered women. I think you encapsulated that beautifully. So this read was a little different for you. Hey, what was there any major takeaways from this read in particular?
I guess probably the one that jumps out at me the most is there is a story about a woman who's struggling with like fertility issues. And, I feel like as a, I don't know, I'm gonna go with like 17-ish year old, you read stuff like that, and it just seems like I don't like it just seems so far away. And I feel like, that one definitely hit me a little bit differently now. And then some of the ones about aging definitely read a little bit differently. I think that one of the things that jumped out at me as a thread through multiple of the stories was the ways in which the different women sort of try to almost like justify themselves for like not living up to certain societal standards by noting the ways in which they like exceeded other ones. Like in the one story, coming into the end zone. So it's one of the ones where she's really talking about aging, and she talks about some of the ways that I guess older folks are just not treated respectfully. And so she's relaying this story of like watching a like a staff person at a doctor's office try to come out and call back a patient. And she's like, she comes out like, "Hey, Ida Lou, come on back." And this Ida Lou is a, doctoral degree professor. And so the writer corrects the like worker at the doctor's office and is like, "She's Dr. Morton, not Ida Lou." But I guess it just sort of stuck with me that, I mean, so what though? Even if she hadn't done like, achieved any kind of degree, she still deserves to be treated respectfully. And I feel like there were other spots, maybe in this same story even, where she kind of justifies people's existence or like justifies that they deserve respect with their list of achievements.
Ah,
And
yes.
I guess I just kind of feel like I don't, even if you didn't achieve anything of consequence at all, you still deserve to be here, to be treated respectfully. The other, probably one of my favorite stories out of the book is the Pam Houston story, Out of Habit, I Start Apologizing. And there is a part where she talks about like she's out hiking and kind of gets like caught in this rainstorm. And she's like about to like take a jump to try to like slide down this mountain to escape this crazy rainstorm. And she says she's counting down from three. And she says, "On two and a half, I realize that no matter how hard I try to find one, there is no scenario of liking my body when it is stationary. No scenario that doesn't take place in a moment of life or death athleticism or of do or die strength. And like that one really hits me, you know? And, you know, I kind of feel like that's what I was doing with the running 50Ks and ultras and stuff,
yes.
You know, that there's the only way that I could like my body is like doing some crazy stunt, you know? And again, you don't need to earn that.
No.
You know?
No, no, no. And I wonder if that's like in the 90s, like you said, I was a teenager growing up in the 90s as well. So I never would have, that never would have occurred to me, this idea that it doesn't matter if a woman, quote unquote, accomplishes anything to earn a sense of respect. That never would have occurred to me at that time, even though I was doing a lot of reading. I probably, you know, this probably would have been a book I would have picked up if I saw it at the time. And it would have been, yes, yes, women, awesome. We're awesome. I wouldn't have caught the nuances very well because life experience, for one thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm looking at this through this lens of doing this work within body liberation. We talk a lot about body respect and about women being in larger bodies and not having to apologize for that and deserving respect regardless of their size and regardless of whether or not they're actually doing any kind of healthy habit. They still deserve
right.
respect and dignity.
Yes. Yes.
So do you think that this is a change that happened like cognizantly within our culture, or do you think that this is just because we've been doing this body liberation work that you were able to see that when you looked at that story this time?
I don't know. I feel like it's maybe only in our little corner,
maybe
our little corner
yes.
of the earth. I definitely think there's still a widespread idea that only certain bodies or certain types of bodies are deserving of respect. And I think that there's definitely still a lot of people who kind of hang their own sense of worth on, you know, whatever, whether it's specific accomplishments or, I mean, shoot, even in like sort of, I don't know, I'll say like body positive communities, you see this among moms, like this sense of women will say things like, how could I hate the body that gave me these babies or whatever? And that always sort of felt like a miss with me. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it until I think I heard someone else really clearly say how that even if your body has never carried a baby, or even if your body carried a baby, but the baby isn't still here, or, you know, whatever, that your body still is entitled to change, to be bigger, to, you know, whatever, that just having a baby isn't the thing that makes your body deserving of respect or appreciation.
Right, 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 right. And that's not the be all end all definition of what a woman is, even though sometimes
right.
I think it gets held up as the pinnacle of what it means to be a woman.
Yes.
I love that. When you came to it, you got even more out of it. I feel like that's the whole point of, in my opinion, of reading nonfiction and especially reading these types of books with the work that we have in mind is every time you read them, you're going to come across something different. And even these conversations I have with people, I'm at the point where I'm going to be having conversations with people for a second time about a book that I've already had on the show. And our conversations are going to be completely different. And that's the whole idea, right? Like you're getting something new out of this because you've had different experiences, because you've done more learning, because you've done more growing. And you're just going to pick up on some different things. So I think that's amazing and wonderful. So I also, in the discussion questions, I also asked you which one of these stories stuck with you the most, was the most, not stuck with you. How did I word it? I actually went back and worded this a couple different ways, but lingered in your psyche is what I put it, or haunted you to some degree.
So I'm gonna say, and haunted is probably the right word for it. There's a story called Mirrors by Lucy Greeley. And so she's a survivor of child cancer and had to have surgery to her face as like after, I guess it was after the cancer, right? That kind of I get, it sounds like it basically removed like a large portion of her jaw and just left her face kind of, I don't like kind of messed up looking. So she, you know, so, and obviously like she had that at like a grade school age and so went through like adolescence, high school, college, like, you know, living with that. And so she talks a little bit about like the bullying and a lot of different things. And one of the things that, so she talks about when she was in treatment, like when she was originally first undergoing chemotherapy. And so this was in the 70s. And she says, you know, that in the early 70s, chemo was even cruder than it is now. The basic premise of it to poison the patient right up to the very brink of their own death. And so she talks about being sort of called a good girl when she would go and not cry. And sort of this struggle with like growing up and defining myself as brave, but brave always meaning silent. Brave meaning that you didn't cry, that you didn't complain, and that that was like how she grew up defining herself. And you know, and then I guess she talks about going through like a different type of chemo that was even worse than the other, and then she would cry and kind of like being shamed about that, about the crying. But I think that the thing that really stuck with me about this story was like, you know, her like struggling with her face in like early adulthood. So in early adulthood, she goes and like travels around the world to get this like really aggressive surgery to try to fix her face. And you know, so it's this like cycle of like skin grafts and they're trying to like build out stuff and so then you know it's not just one surgery, like it's a series of surgeries trying to fix her face. And you know, I don't know, it was one that just always kind of stuck with me, you
Well,
know.
what was interesting, like that, and I agree, it's haunting the way she talks about how she gets these surgeries, and the way the surgery works is it kind of works for a while, and then slowly she talks about how it kind of creates a caved in look on the side of her face. So it's like she looks almost, quote unquote, almost normal. And then it slowly goes to this place where she's getting, all these comments about her face. So, and then at the end, it sounds like this last surgery worked. And then at the end, she's sitting there in this cafe and this man, and they're having this normal conversation. Her mind's kind of wandering away about how, she's in this space which she'd always imagined and always hoped. And she'd hoped for this man to kind of reflect back to her normalcy, her love, her value, her worth. And that's not exactly what she's getting back. And I thought that that was a really interesting place to leave the story. I kind of wanted to read more. I was like, tell me about your life with this new face.
So, can I tell you, after I read this, I ended up Googling her, which
Really?
the first time that I read this story would not have been an option, right?
Right,
I'd have been
right,
hitting up my
Yeah,
dial-up and
no.
jumping on Ask Jeeves or something. So I Googled her up and this takes a very depressing twist. She is dead from either like an opioid overdose, possibly accidentally, possibly by suicide. There's some like debate, but yeah, she like is no
Oh my
longer with
God.
us.
Oh my
And
God.
So, and I can totally see how, like, she would end up addicted to opioids, like between the surgeries and then pain, and then, I mean,
My God, wow.
struggling with the emotional pain, you know? So, and she has a couple of other books that, and one that is, that talks more about her personal, like, experiences more in depth. So she has a couple of other books. So you definitely could read more on it.
Yeah,
But
wow.
I was like, when I found that out, it was like, oh,
Yeah, that's
gosh,
really
what
sad.
a tragedy,
Yeah,
dude. Like,
totally. I mean, her words are like, well, like we both said that this was a powerful story and it haunted us. So she has had, I guess, such talent, and I'm grateful for that we are able to discuss this and talk a little more about it. But wow, that's really tragic.
I feel like one of the things from this story, and it's definitely a thing that pops up in some of the other ones, is that, like, attaching of your value as a woman to, like, the male gaze,
Yes.
or, like, to your, like, sort of sexual currency, I guess, or, you know, whatever. And, like, that, like, idea, like, if no man wants you, like, you're not worth
Yep.
anything
Yeah.
or something.
Yeah, I know, I totally agree, and it's interesting the way it within a lot of them, there's a lot of talk about what men think about women's bodies. And I thought that was
There's
interesting.
in one of the stories, and maybe it's at the beginning, kind of. I don't even know which story it is. I'm not gonna waste time trying to find it. But they're sitting in a restaurant. It's a group of, like, women friends sitting in a restaurant, and they start going on, like, rating different people on attractiveness. And so they're rating, like, you know, first they start with themselves and then with other people that they know, and then they start, you know, going down, like, famous people and rating all different kinds of people. And their waitress overhears them and says to them, "It's the 90s, girls. We're supposed to be into inner beauty now."
And you know what? When I read that line in my head, I was like, I can't tell if this waitress is trying to be snarky, like I heard you guys talking, rating everyone, we're not supposed to be doing that, or if she's kind of being like, everybody still does it, so it's kind of funny, I'm laughing it off. Like I was like,
Right.
ah,
Right. I don't know. I took it as kind of
Yeah.
jokey,
Yeah.
like,
Yeah, like we're
but
supposed to be into this, but none of us, like we all sit here and do this anyway.
right. Yeah, it just, I don't know. I just found it very amusing.
Well, and let's talk about that in particular. So comparison. We all do this, and like you said, it was a kind of a theme throughout that, you know, women compare themselves to others. How do we get out of that? How do we stop comparing ourselves? And especially because I find we do this especially with the body parts that we hate. You know, like
Right.
I really, you know, I struggled for a long time with my belly because I have a belly that protrudes. So when
Yeah.
I walk into a room, that's the first thing I notice about everyone. One of these stories, there was a lady who says that she notices everybody's skin because she has these wrinkles above her lips. So she notices everybody's skin when they walk in. We all do it. So what do you think? How do we do it?
I will go, I'll get there, but there's a line in one of the stories where she says, "And then I realized that for the last, I don't know,
Oh,
7 minutes, I've been
yeah.
walking down the street comparing my body to every other woman that I've passed." Did I say 7 minutes? I meant 7 years. And
Yes.
I was
It
like,
was funny.
oh man, that's so
Yeah.
real.
Nailed
So real.
it.
And I think it's definitely not easy to get out of that comparison trap, right? And I definitely think that social media has kind of amplified that for us, made it certainly easier to have a wider array of bodies to compare to all hours of the night and day. But, you know, I think for me, a lot of that is just trying to turn the focus back to myself. And then, you know, even if someone is in a bigger or a smaller body than mine, like, who cares? And what impact does that have on me and on my life? You know, and I think to some extent maybe it's about starting to appreciate body diversity rather than looking at, I'm gonna, like, pivot to a different book, but I've been listening to, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, The Body's Not an Apology, Sonya Renee
there
Taylor.
There you go. Yep. Thank you. Yep, yes. Yep. So I've been listening to that book, like on audiobook, and she talks about that idea of the default body. And I think that when we appreciate body diversity, we get away from that idea of there being like a default body. And if there's not one body that we all should be working towards, which honestly sounds pretty absurd when you say it out loud, right? Then like, of course we all look different. Of course there's, you know, women who are taller or shorter or thinner or heavier or, you know, more muscular. Everyone's got different hair and different skin tones, and that's how we are meant to be, and that's okay. And all of those bodies are still worthy of love and deserving of respect. So, you know, I think that that's a really long and indirect answer to how to get out of the comparison trap. I think for me, another thing, and this has been like a really important piece of my like intuitive eating and like body respect journey, and your mileage may vary, but I had to unfollow a lot of people on social media. Like people that if I just found myself scrolling by and then like sort of having that constant like yearning for like, maybe I could be that small if I just did this one thing. And I just had to ditch a lot of those. And I mean, most of they're not like my friends. They're just people that I was following. And you know, if I need fitness inspiration, there's plenty of fit, fat people who I can follow to get all of the fitness inspiration that I could possibly need without also feeling like maybe this next one would be different. Yeah, and then, you know, sometimes I like that snooze for 30 days.
Yes.
Option.
I've used that one myself. Right? Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love that option.
Me too.
You know, you see someone join one of those like diet things that, oh man, he's going to be all on that for the next month. Like, snooze for 30 days. Yeah. We'll see what he's posting.
Exactly. Exactly. Normally by that time, the novelty's wore off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know with me when I was dieting, that was all I ever wanted to talk about. So that was all I was ever posting about. So
yeah,
that snooze thing is great because it's like, okay, they come back, they're still doing it, snooze again. And it's okay. They don't even know.
Yeah.
Not like anybody tracks these things anyway. I mean, I don't know. When was the last time I looked at my friends list and went, oh, I'm down a friend. I wonder who that was. Didn't do that. Never have. Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay. Well, let's talk about feminism. We're kind of jumping all over on my questions, but this was one I really, really wanted to get to because after reading this book, there was a couple of different thoughts going through my head, but I want to know what your thoughts are about body liberation fitting into feminism and how you think this book kind of fits into both of those things.
When you posed that question, I was like, this is such an interesting, like conceptual thing. And my mind immediately went to like kind of Venn diagram, right?
Okay.
Like that you've got like feminism and body liberation, and there's definitely like some overlap here in the middle, right? But there's definitely parts of feminism that I would say, I mean, I don't know, maybe you could say are tangentially related to body liberation, but like, you know, the equal pay issues and like violence against women things, like these are things that are probably a little more tangentially related. But there's some very definite overlap. And then I think that body liberation also kind of encompasses, I guess, like a broader, more intersectional kind of approach. And I think encompasses the idea that like all bodies are okay as they are. And that there's room for all different kinds of bodies, you know? And so I think that there's some very definite overlap, but I would say that there's probably pieces of both that, and I think that it is interesting reading stuff out of like that kind of 90s
I think
era
so
of
too. I
feminism,
agree.
because I feel like we were in a weird spot, right? Like there was a lot of backlash, and I feel like nobody really wanted to identify as a feminist because they had really drugged the word feminazi thing that, so I feel like a lot of these stories are sort of about feminism or have feminist themes, but I don't know that any of the authors really like said it that, and then there's still in those stories like such elements of like patriarchy, like the kind of fix my face to cater to the male gaze kind of thing, and then I think even in some of the other stories about body size, where there's this definite idea of, needing to be able to attract a partner, and I'm not going to say that, in 2021 we've moved all the way past that, but I think that there definitely are people out there now thinking a bit more critically about some of those ideas, when I don't think in the 90s I really heard anyone talking about catering to the male gaze. Like that just that wasn't a thing that was on anyone's radar.
But I, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Growing up in that time, at least from my perspective as a teenager, I too felt like it was like, yes, feminism was talked about, but it was joked about. It was almost like, it was like those raging feminists who burned their bras and you joked about it. You didn't want to be one of those. As a teenager, you didn't want to be one of those. You wanted to fit in with the guys. You wanted to be, the cool hip chick who didn't really care. One of the things I did notice with this group of stories, and I think this is why this came up for me, is because there wasn't a lot of stories directly relating to weight. So there was two in particular that really strongly focused on the thinness of a couple of women. And then there was two that kind of talked about weight, but the woman who, even in the one, a weight that women carry that talked directly about size. She was a size 14. So she really wasn't even all that big. So we're talking about a collection of stories where thinness seems to be more problematic. Like reading those collection of stories, you go, oh, well, too thin is more of a problem than being too fat.
The Moroccan bath story was really interesting. And I think that, some of that is definitely like cross-cultural. And then there was the one book by, or the one story by Connie Porter.
Love that
Connie
one.
Porter, Beauty and the Beast. And she talks about like trying to like cram
Yes.
into those like, I guess like
Yes.
80s like
Yes.
trash jeans. And about like having just too much butt and that they never worked on her body type. And so it's again, I guess not necessarily like being fat specifically, but like having a body
Yes.
size or shape that doesn't fit the
Yeah. And
ideal.
I mean, I guess for me, being in this realm with body liberation, there is a lot of books now written. Maybe not a lot. Not a lot. Sorry, not a lot. But there is a few books written about being on kind of the super fat on the spectrum there, where there's super fat or infinite fat, and dealing with kind of day-to-day difficulties with being that size that I don't think are even close to addressed in here. Whereas on the thin side
Oh
of things, like
no.
when she gets into the anorexic, the story about life size where the girl's in getting treatment for anorexic, or the Moroccan bath story where she's talking about people literally thin shaming her, we really do get into the day-to-day struggles of being extremely thin. And so for me, when I was reading that, I sort of went, this really, to me, is one of the big, or I hope one of the biggest differences between feminism in the 90s and feminism now. I don't believe all feminists believe or think that women in larger bodies deserve to be in larger bodies. I do still think there are a lot of feminist circles who draw that line the way they do in body positivity, where it's like, oh, I'm all for you, you know, having a few extra pounds, but
like up to
yeah.
this yeah. line, some, you know, and
exactly.
arbitrary, you know, like yeah. there's sort of a point at which like, below yeah. this is okay, above
exactly.
this.
Exactly. And I do believe no, that there's a lot of feminists who feel that way, but acceptable. I do believe also we have come a little ways. So yes. I guess reading this, I sort of went, okay, in terms of body liberation, body politics, I am not sure. Obviously, I don't think in the 90s they were there. I'm still not sure we're there, but I think we're a little closer there. So I don't know. It was kind of an interesting thing for me to think about and bring up and yeah, for us to talk about feminism, body liberation, body politics, yeah. and the rest of it. Anyway, I want to be respectful of your time. So before I ask you my question that I ask everyone about different books, was there anything else you wanted to say about this book and the way it's impacted you and what your thoughts are around, you know, just why it was such a good read?
The thing that pulled me into it was really the different women's kind of candor in speaking about their struggles and really kind of laying things bare. And even, you know, the way that it jumped out at me, how many of the women kind of justified their bodies with accomplishments, whether it's, you know, academic or career or, you know, athletic or whatever. I think that the reason that jumped out at me so much is because I can relate to that now, you know? You know, I guess just the way that they kind of laid bare so many of their body struggles and I guess how universal that it is, like the extent to which we like focus on our physical selves. And kind of that exterior appearance. And, you know, you had, I think one of the questions that you had planned that you didn't get to, and I was dreading
it,
was, is it in one of the stories, she says that there's something natural about young women beginning the search and doing some disassembling and examining themselves part by part and then reconstructing themselves. And your question was about, like, is that really a natural thing? And I think I was like, gosh, that's a tough question. But the more that I kind of mulled it over, I kind of don't think that it is. You know, I don't really think that it is natural that all young women should go through. I think that it's a process maybe that has been instilled in us really probably by patriarchy, by feeling like we need to like bring this like sexual currency that we need to, you know, be attractive to find a mate. And like, I don't think that that's necessarily a natural process in all cultures.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously in different cultures, the ways in which young women pick their bodies apart varies, right? Because, I mean, they talked about it in the Moroccan bath story that they want, you know, big childbearing hips and they want to see like a healthy amount of fat that makes it look like, okay, yes, yeah. that woman's got a body that'll feed my babies. Where in, you know, reading that in the 90s was like, really? That's yeah. a thing in some
yeah,
places?
No, that's true. That is so, so true. And I think the reason that because there wasn't a lot of questions, the discussion questions I gave you, I didn't pull, or I tried not to pull out just one thing from one story. But that quote in particular got to me because I think about how many people I know who that's not a process for them. They know that beauty, quote unquote, matters in this world. Therefore, they buy into that. Therefore, all the things that they do, the nail appointments, the hair appointments, whether they're tricking themselves into believing that they're doing it because they want to, or
they really do like it. I don't know. But this process of thinking about why they're doing these things and whether or not it actually matters and whether or not it is what they want to do, I don't see it as a natural process. I don't see women deconstructing it and pulling it apart. Right. There's very few, I feel, that do. I think most people just sort of go, that's what I have to do. Like that's the more natural thing is to just go with the flow and appeal to the male gaze. So I think that's why I asked you that question.
Right. Right. I'll tell you, this is a little bit of a left turn, but like, I don't wear makeup like on the regular. I just don't do makeup. It's not really my thing. It's uncomfortable on my skin. It's just not my thing. As a fitness professional and trying to like make it on social media, I see other, even like, mm-hmm. like other fat fitness professionals. I see a lot of them, like they got their faces done. Wow. Like their faces are made up. And it's like, I definitely look at these things sometimes and I'm like, do I need to do that? Yes. I totally agree with you
because it's like, on the one hand, you can put your professional life and say, this is who I am as a person. But in order to make it, like in order to quote unquote make it, in order for me to actually get a following and get people and get my business going, it's a different story.
Yes.
I totally agree. Like, I totally agree. I'm right there with you because I feel the exact same way because I do all these videos. Well, all these videos, but these videos now for this book club I'm doing, and I don't. And I sometimes go, should I?
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's really weird. Right. Like I guess it just seems like that is even among women who would identify as being like feminists or body liberation oriented or fat positive, that I don't know, I guess the pretty face just gets the clicks at the end of the day.
I have seen that. And I struggle with that a little bit because I'm sort of, and I had this discussion with someone where it was like, okay, so when I love this, I love that we're looking at bodies that are all shapes and sizes on social media. But I know for me, I'm particularly careful about looking at these bodies and going, I don't want to do to them what I have done to thin white females and just go, well, this is who I now need to compare myself to. Like there's no reason that we need to sit here and objectify them and make them now our new bar. That's not it at all. Like, that's not the whole point, but sometimes we miss that point. Sometimes we go, you know, this is what we need to do. And that's so hard. It's totally agree with you that it is a difficult thing to try to figure out.
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of want to be respectful of your time. So, but this book was, we could probably go on for like,
sorry.
As I was reading through it again this afternoon, I sort of went, we could spend a week on this book. Like there's so much in here. Each story is pretty incredible and deserves its own spot. There really is. So we could go on forever. So I'm, you know what? I'm glad we got to what we got to. That was perfect. So let's say a friend of yours borrows your copy, reads it, because it is actually hard to get a copy of this book right now. and they really like it. Yes. And they're like, hey, I'm interested in some more stuff on this whole body liberation stuff. What would you recommend that they read?
I would say, I mean, like I said, I'm currently reading The Body is Not an Apology. And I think that is an incredible next read for anyone, you know, and definitely hits on a lot of the issues that are sort of hinted at in this book, but from a very different perspective. The other one, and, you know, I don't still have my copy of The Body Project, and that seems a little bit less difficult to find, but I think that would be an interesting reread at this point. Again, that one is more, it's a little bit more of a kind of historical perspective on like young women and young adults and their bodies. And sort of how the ideals have shifted over time. And about like menstruation and how young women feel about menstruation and kind of how that has evolved over time. So it's definitely an interesting, you know, and then again, more of that kind of 90s feminism perspective.
if someone's doing the what do you call it when you're doing like a throwback, they might also want to pick up the beauty myth, because it's right in there with the 90s too. Held its own. I mean, honestly, they've done edition after edition of that one, but it's definitely a 90s, like even reading it through, it's like, yeah, okay, everything, yeah, even all the examples and everything are from 90s court cases and that kind of thing. So, yeah, we'll keep it a triad of different little, a trilogy of little 90s body politics stuff, women's stuff. I like it. I like it. That's great. That's awesome. Well, let's finish this up, Jess. Where can people find you? What have you got going on? What kind of things are happening for you right now?
So I am at Enlighten Well on Facebook and Instagram. Find me online at enlightenwellllc.com. I am currently enrolling people for the Lightbulb Fitness Club, kicking off on May 1st. I'm super excited about that. It's going to be a 3-month long program where we're going to work on incorporating regular movement alongside with mindset and some gentle nutrition stuff. So I'm really stoked for that. I also teach some regular group fitness classes. So if you want to just like pop in, check out a class, I have some stuff on YouTube, like little workouts that you can go and do on your own. So I'm all over the place, but probably if you hit my website, it's a good starting place to find everything.
Cool. Well, I'll have links to all of it. People can just
awesome
scroll down and click. It'll all be there for you with your website right up at the top. So that is so awesome. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on to Fat Girl Book Club.
Dude, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this. It's very fun to kind of read a book and then dissect it with a like-minded person. So very cool idea. I like it.
I really hope that you enjoyed that discussion with Jess. You know, this is one of the reasons why I do this podcast. When someone had a book impact them in some way, that's powerful. And Jess had this book impact her in a way that it came back to her later on in her life when she started thinking, going into these body liberation spaces. So much so that she brought this book to my attention. So now not only did this book impact her in her past, it now impacts me. She's able to revisit not just that experience, but look at this book through a different lens, or at least a changing, shifting lens from what it used to look like when she was in her teenage years. Anyway, this was an interesting discussion. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I hope you did too. You know where to find me. I am Fat Girl Book Club Pod on Instagram. Don't forget to check out the merchandise there. There will be, if you scroll down, you will find a link to that Instagram account in the show notes. And also don't forget to jump on over to the website, iwishiwereme.com, and pick up your free copy of your Better Body Image Checklist. I hope to see you guys in the Facebook book club group. Let's talk more books, guys. Well, until next time, keep reading, everyone.